Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. Subscribers, thank you so much for your support. Those watching on all the different platforms or listening to the podcast, please consider going to agendaweekly.com and become a subscriber there and get our newsletter, our prayer and action items, and all the different things we have each week. We need your support, and I think you need our resources to help save you time and to be more effective in what you're doing. Last week, I had talked about Kash Patel being booted out because I thought that was happening with Pam Bondi, but it wasn't, so was correcting that. Too bad it didn't happen. It needs to. But also wanted to thank Dwayne and Donna, and I got a donation from you all, but there was no address on the check. Normally, I always write a thank you note because I am so grateful for anything any of you do. It's a great blessing. I don't expect it at all, and when I get it, I'm thankful. But I didn't have an address. I wanted you to know, thank you, Dwayne and Donna, very much. You've always been a great blessing, but I don't have your current address on that check, and so I didn't know where to respond. Also wanted to talk about my Seattle friend sends me a donation and a quote every so often. Here's the quote from Montesquieu. The tyranny of a prince in an oligarchy is not so dangerous to the public welfare as the apathy of a citizen in a democracy. So the tyranny of a prince, say you live in the Soviet Union where you have a tyranny of an oligarchy over you, that, as we saw in the Soviet Union, that didn't destroy the people as much as apathy, like we see in America sometimes, does. It almost builds the people's strength. They have jokes about the government. They behind the scenes are strong. But anyway, the tyranny of a prince in an oligarchy is not so dangerous to the public welfare as the apathy of a citizen in a democracy. When you have a democracy or a republic like we have, where people get a vote and be part of what's going on, if they're apathetic and go, oh, I'm not going to waste time voting, I've got better things to do, that's really dangerous, because then the wicked get in there, they pass laws to allow them to be fraudulent in the elections like they have been, and things like that. It's hard to unwind all the corruption that hurts the public welfare. But thank you again to my friend in Seattle who sends me those donations without their name and the quotes. I really appreciate them. Today I've got a variety of things, so it's not a specific topic. I'm going to talk a little more about Lee Harvey Oswald, some very important things. Also about an article I read, Something Dark is Going On, that I thought was interesting enough to bring up, because things don't happen by accident. There is something going on. A little update on the Iran war, and then also talking briefly about the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor 85 years ago this December. Anyway, I hope this will be a blessing to you, and I really appreciate you joining me. I wanted to talk about Lee Harvey Oswald for a minute because, as we talked about recently, the narrative in the history books will probably always be the narrative in the history books. Lee Harvey Oswald shot Kennedy. He was a lone gunman. There was no conspiracy. He was on the sixth floor of the depository or whatever, all that stuff, all of which is a lie. But we know Lee Harvey Oswald didn't shoot a gun that day because the police did the test on him for that. We know he wasn't on the sixth floor because people at the time of the shooting said he was in the cafeteria on the second floor, and a million other things that we know exposed that he was, and he knew he was, a patsy. He was the only one smart enough. Usually they deal with pretty dumb people, and so they don't even understand they're the patsy until it's too late. Well, he knew instantly when they said, you're charged with murdering the president. He goes, is that what I'm being charged with? He didn't even know that when they had arrested him. But I want to talk about that because I just was thinking about his parents, his mother, father, I don't know who was living or whatever, but they died thinking their son had killed the president of the United States when he did not do that. But as I've dug in and studied this, and one of the great books that has some interesting facts I haven't found in any of the other books. There's hundreds of books that dispel the Lee Harvey Oswald narrative. But Dr. Mary's Monkeys, talking about this secret biolab the CIA and our government had in New Orleans. And Dr. Mary Sherman was there, and Lee Harvey Oswald worked with her. As you start to piece together that and the hundreds of other books I've read on this and documentaries I've watched, you realize Lee Harvey Oswald was a patriotic guy that loved America. And when he was sent to the Soviet Union, he was sent there. He didn't defect to the Soviet Union like we're told. How do we know that? For many reasons. But one, he was able just to come right back into America when he was done with that, showing it was a mission he was on. Other higher-ups would have said, no, you defected to the Soviet Union, you're not coming back into America. But he went there because he was wanting to build with the CIA, and we know he worked with the CIA. He wanted to build a reputation as being anti-American and pro-communist. Why? Because they had a plan for him, and he was part of this plan. He was going to take a bioweapon to Cuba and kill Castro, and he was willing to do that, showing he wasn't a communist, he was an anti-communist. And that's why they had him handing out literature on the street corners in New Orleans and other places of, you know, pro-Castro stuff, because they were building a reputation as a communist. We know now, too, that him having gone down to the embassy, the Soviet embassy in Mexico and all that, that never happened. That was a lie. That was somebody else. The pictures and the audio from him being there weren't him. They realized, oh, and J. Edgar Hoover even talked about that. It wasn't him who was down there. And, of course, they knew that, but they wanted to build that Cuban connection, the Soviet Union connection, the handed out anti-American literature connection. So when the bioweapon was ready, they would send him to Cuba, and Castro would welcome him in because he's like, oh yeah, this is a pro-communist guy, and he would be able to get this weapon to him. I don't have time to get into the whole story, but it's pretty amazing if you read that book, Dr. Mary's Monkeys. And he worked there with Alton Ochsner, David Ferry, Guy Bannister, and Mary Sherman and other ones. And it was, they were building a lot of weapons there. They were integrating monkey viruses into the vaccines. And that's a whole separate story to get into. They were also, the author believes now that he looks back, they created AIDS in that laboratory. What they were doing is they had a radiation machine where they were radiating different monkey viruses, and they were putting them in mice, and they were trying to mutate them to get them where they could put them in humans. And they were coming up with one specifically for Castro in Cuba. And that's what Lee Harvey Oswald thought he was doing. And he was in on that. Yeah, I'm going to kill Castro. He's, you know, taken over Cuba. And so, but then while he's there, they call him, hey, we need you to come to Dallas for something. And he goes there. And of course, they have him at the right place at the right time. He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know what he's doing. And then, but they know, here's the plan. We'll have the shooter over here, but we'll act like he's up there. And we're going to confiscate all cameras, all film, all everything at the place. We're not going to have any ABC, NBC, CBS. None of the local TV stations are going to be there for the newscast that night of showing the president was in Dallas. Right there you show that, you know, the Mockingbird media, how much control they had, where they could tell all the local stations, don't go film the president in your town tonight, you know, driving through the city, waving to everyone and everything. No media was there. And the one guy that had the movie camera, of course, is Zapata. They took that and confiscated it from him, and he never saw it again. And we didn't see it till years later. But that's a lot of what was going on there. And then they pulled him in as a patsy, and he knew he was a patsy. And then they realized he's going to blow the cover on this. So then they had Jack Ruby, who was also working with the CIA and had many bad mafia connections. They had him just kill him the next day. And so, but I don't know, I guess as a parent, I was thinking about his parents after I'd done the episode a week or so ago about him. I go, a guy that thought he was doing what was good, he was willing to sacrifice for the cause, to stop communism, and what happens? They set him up, tarnish him and his whole family forever as wicked evil. How could you kill John F. Kennedy? when he would never have done that. And I felt bad about that. But that Dr. Mary's Monkeys book, if you're interested in digging in, that's one of the most interesting ones I've read in a long time. And it just puts a few more pieces of the puzzle there. But if you've read all the different ones out there together, you slowly get a very clear picture of what's going on. If you just read one, sometimes you'll have one fact that, well, that was really good, but you're still not sure what happened. But I've read enough and watched enough to know Lee Harvey Oswald was a good guy. And he had no plans to kill the president or anything else, or wicked government officials, George Bush Sr., who was there in Dallas with the CIA, and all the other corrupt cronies and evil people. They hated Kennedy because he was getting ready to dismantle and abolish the CIA. He was getting ready to have Congress issue a silver-backed currency. And they're like, we got to get rid of him. So the bankers, the globalists, the elites, and he wasn't wanting World War III, which is what they were trying to get us into back then. Anyway, that's something I just wanted to talk about because I feel it's evil when someone's reputation is destroyed and then they're killed, and so no one ever clears their reputation. Another interesting thing this week, it was an article I read from a week ago called Something Dark is Going On. It's by Tyler Durden, and he said 9 top-level scientists die or go missing in the last year. And it goes through all these different people, and it is something where they're all working at these special laboratories, nuclear facilities, national security projects, and they just some weird stuff. 9 of them, and they're either shot dead just on their front porch, and no one knows who did it. There's no information, or they disappear. They're hiking, and they're never seen again, ever. 9 different ones. And I know they're working on UFO research and different things with the military. And it does stink. One working with the Department of Nuclear Science and Engineering. I just wanted to bring that up in that evil men are always scheming. They're always conspiring together to do things to get more power, control, to silence those who might come against them and expose their evil deeds. That's just the way the world works. And of course, they've tried to get us all along to believe history has no conspiracies, which is just so crazy. Everything in history is conspiracy. I don't think you can think of a single solitary event that there was at least 2 people involved in planning it, executing it, whatever. They act like, no, it's always just some lone person. That's what they say in every narrative. Well, it's not true, but things are going on and we need to pay attention and keep focusing in on specific things and not getting sidetracked on just the overflow of news. They purposely send it us every day just to bury us where we just can't even remember what we were thinking about, what we were trying to find out, what we were, you know, interested in researching. It just, boom, it keeps coming. That's all part of the strategy. Of course, the Iran war update, I'm coming from the position, I'm just totally anti-war. The older I've gotten and I've studied history and realized they're all for no reason. They're all to make big corporations richer, to eliminate enemies of particular people in our government stuff. It's not about freedom and all the things we're told it's about. So I don't like war, just killing human beings that are made in the image of God, just incessantly with no, just being so callous to not even think about these are people that are just being blown to bits or whatever. There is a growing anti-Trump set movement that's starting. I know they set him up to do this. It's COVID 2.0. They had COVID the first term to destroy all the effective things that were happening through his programs. And then they sucked him into this, trying to do the same thing. But when he said, the whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back, that's not the talk of a freedom-loving president, an honorable man. You don't talk like that. If you really have the power, then you have the power. But you don't, we're going to kill everybody. It's foolish, idle talk. The Trump recovery is in trouble. I just know I just filled up a gas two days ago, and it was $125 to fill my tank. And not that long ago, it was like 50 or less. So it's unbelievable. That's hurting people. And it's going to start escalating into all the things that we buy because it's all transported. In a war situation, it's important to remember only military targets are legitimate in any war ever. It's never just, like we did in World War II, carpet bombing of cities where you're just killing indiscriminately everyone. I don't care how evil the enemy is, that is wrong to do. The Iraq War, where we starve to death and slaughter over 1 million civilians to leave the country in a far worse state than it was before. When you have to remember, too, who put Saddam Hussein in power? We did. Who gave him the chemical weapons? We did. You have to study history and you realize, well, we're against this guy now. Before, we're the ones that put him up in power. We gave him the chemical weapons to use against Iran. For 10 years, we funded and we armed him to attack them, and he couldn't beat them, so it finally ended. And then we get mad at him because he has chemical weapons that we gave to him. I mean, it's, if you really study it, it's like, it's frustrating because there's so many lies and half-truths and propaganda, and it comes again so fast, we forget what's even going on. But hitting civilian infrastructure, the power, the water, transportation and housing, the neighborhoods and stuff, that's always evil. I don't care what's going on. I don't care who the enemy is. That's wrong. The facts of the Strait of Hormuz, hopefully the two-week ceasefire he has going now, they'll be able to work through that and then stop the war and get things back going. I hope that happens. We need to pray that that happens. War is never a good solution to the problem. It just creates more problems, and all the refugee crisis. Now you're going to have millions of Iranians being sent to Europe and America. They need to be resettled. Their country's been destroyed, which will destroy Europe even more and America even more. It's all a plan. They know what they're doing. They displace the people they want to move with wars, with forced famines, with things so that they can move them to the areas where it will break down the cohesiveness of societies so they collapse from within. One big thing I always pay attention to is when people that were always on one side then flip to the other side, you're like, okay, something's going on here. I just noticed all the Never Trumpers, like the Mark Levins who hated Trump. You can watch videos of him. And the Lindsey Graham, like I played a week or so ago, just hated Trump. All of them, when they're just praising him incessantly, you go, something's wrong. When you see that flip, that means someone has been deceived into doing things that aren't consistent with who they said they were. The globalists want to collapse our economy to impoverish us. Of course, the poorer we are, the easier we are to control. But also, so they can buy up all the companies in our stock market. If they can get the economy to collapse, they buy them up pennies on the dollar, and then they have more power and control. I really think all of this has been to create the conditions for the COVID 2.0, because in crisis and collapse, you can regulate more. You have to have handouts to the people because they can't pay the high prices of things. So it gives you more power over them. And so just be careful what you get sucked into, what you listen to, because in wartime situations, if you study the last 200 years, both sides, the good guys and the bad guys, everything they're spewing out is propaganda. So it's not true. When our side says, here's what's happening, you know that's not true. They wouldn't be saying what's really happening. And when the other side's saying, here's what's happening, you know that's not true. They wouldn't be saying what's really happening. They never do. You look at World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, all the stuff our government was saying, Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Iraq War, Afghanistan. It was all lies the whole time. So don't trust what you're hearing from the talking heads, but do pray that there'll be peace in the Middle East, that the war will stop, and they'll be able to come up with solutions to what's going on over there. The whole idea, and I was listening to Diana West this week and something she released. I'm going to play a few minutes of this because it's a short clip showing how Pearl Harbor, which if you studied all, you know it wasn't a surprise attack. We knew far in advance that was going to happen. It was a surprise to our military at Pearl Harbor and most Americans and most people in the world because they weren't privy to the information that we'd already deciphered the Japanese codes. We already knew how to listen to everything they were talking about, and we knew they were going to go attack. FDR and his whole administration knew Pearl Harbor on December 7th was going to be blown up, and it wasn't a surprise attack, but they needed that to get us into the war. But this December, that'll be 85 years ago, but we need to correct the narratives once we learn those weren't true. What we were told was a lie.
Donald Trump was hosting the Prime Minister of Japan when he took a question about the Iran operation that came from a Japanese reporter who wanted to know why Donald Trump has not informed his allies, so-called, about the Iran operation in advance. And Trump, his retort was, "Who knows better about surprise than Japan? Why didn't you tell me about Pearl Harbor?" Okay, Trump said. And this created kind of a stir. I haven't stopped thinking about it because what we're seeing is, once again, another echo from World War II, another iteration of court history promulgated by the president in terms of this notion of the surprise attack on December 7th, 1941. And it rolled trippingly off his tongue, and why wouldn't it? Because all of the consensus history, the court historians, the attack on December 7th, 41 was a surprise attack. And this just rolls trippingly off everyone's tongue. And this really sent me back to the books, because even though I have written about Pearl Harbor, not at length, not as much as I would like to, but it is in American Betrayal. Some very interesting things I came up with in my research in American Betrayal that were shocking to me because I'd been raised on surprise attack. And I guess it depends what the definition of surprise is, not to quote Bill Clinton. Obviously, there were many, many, in fact, most people in the world were surprised. Certainly, the men on the ships at Pearl Harbor were surprised and were killed for it, nearly 3,000. The commanders at Pearl Harbor, General Short, Admiral Kimmel, were surprised. And I'll explain why. And Americans opening their newspapers, again, along with the rest of the world, were shocked and outraged and surprised. And let's move back to Washington, D.C. Let's move to London. Let's move to Moscow. There was not surprise everywhere in those capitals. And in Washington, which is where it's important, there was not surprise among those who'd been reading the Japanese secret cables, which are known as the magic cables. There was not surprise, and they'd been reading them for some time. And they'd been disseminating them for some time among seniors in military and civilian power, including secretaries of state, White House, Harry Hopkins, FDR. And it's not necessarily clear who was reading what when, but this information was percolating at this high level in Washington. And there were certain cryptologists who were flagging these intercepts with increasing alarm, especially once they come up with, so you've got sort of this months-long period of reading about Japanese intentions, clearly taking America and Japan to the brink of war soon, if something does not prevent it. So you have this consternation, this understanding that something is really brewing. Then as you actually come close, you have certain key cables, you have certain key events coming toward the end of November, coming into the early days of December. And just to give you an example, at a certain point, there is a cable that explains that in the event of a rupture between Japan and America, there will be a coded message to indicate the state of hostilities. And very famously, the code for America to indicate that there was a rupture that amounted to war or would, could surely turn into war very quickly, east winds ring. And this was a very innocent sounding weather report that would be inserted into the regular Japanese broadcast. And this was deciphered. And to make many long and tangled stories short, 72 hours before the attack, the what is known as the winds execute message is detected by our wonderful people listening on listening posts. And the chief cryptologist, Captain Lawrence Safford, is our source on this, our first source, the whistleblowing source, as it turns out, 72 hours out. And there's all kinds of scrambling going on and wrangling going on. And even as we get closer and closer to December 6th, December 7th, the very famous, you may have heard of the, or read greatly into, the history of the 14-part message that arrives 13 parts on December 6th, the last final part to come really at the time of the attack on December 7th from Japan, that were basically announcing we're at war. But it's the last communique. And even at that point, December 6th, night of December 6th, morning of December 7th, there was time to warn Pearl. But what I wanted to say was, in terms of how you define surprise, it was a surprise to the commanders at Pearl. We eventually, painfully, painstakingly find out, but not really as a country that registers this. This information that I just described was withheld, was not disseminated, was not shared with the commanders on at Pearl Harbor. And what comes out of this is so much tragedy and bloodshed and loss and pain and betrayal. You know, this is a classic American betrayal story. If we, let alone the men who lost their lives that day, we can also look to the heartbreaking, epic tragedy of Admiral Kimmel's life after Pearl Harbor, because Admiral Kimmel and General Short became the Roosevelt administration's scapegoats. There was an initial inquiry, a rush job that was crooked as a snake, as one of those who ended up coming out against it eventually termed it, that was run under the auspices of a Supreme Court Justice, Owen Roberts. And in that initial, you know, things were still burning practically in Pearl Harbor. It was that soon after. In that initial investigation, Kimmel and Short were accused of dereliction of duty and blamed entirely for the sneak attack. The sneak attack that, had been predicted by many and, you know, was very alarming. The messages that were coming into Washington from all kinds of communications between Japan and its various embassies, including instructions to a spy in Honolulu on what kind of information to get about the battleships and where they were and things like that. I mean, this was very specific and alarming information, not shared. So do we call that a surprise attack? How can that be a surprise attack? But there's so many other levels in which it cannot be a surprise attack in the way we've been led to believe, that we all went to bed on December 6th happy and content and the world was at peace, and we woke up December 7th and it was at war. This is the convenient narrative, but it is by no means the complicated and indeed dark and fascinating and still perplexing reality. And so my question really is, and maybe what kept me focused on this really all week, thinking about it, why is it so important to the conventional wisdom historians, the court historians? Why is it so important to preserve this narrative of surprise? And, you know, the story I'm telling you is something that has been retold and told many times before in various books, in studies, in congressional investigations, in you know, it's all over the record, but the record has not been integrated or acknowledged. And this is what makes it such a classic story for American Betrayal, the book, because this is sort of the nub of what I set out to do, is to try to incorporate these stories or these events into what we know as a people. It is wrong, 84 years out, coming up on the 85th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. It is wrong to still speak of it in terms of a sneak attack, because that's not what the record shows.
Like Lee Harvey Oswald, who was just bashed in history and shouldn't have been. Admiral Kimmel being demoted instead of promoted, as if he was negligent. That's why Pearl Harbor happened, when they knew it was going to happen, but didn't tell him. Those things need to be corrected. Pearl Harbor was an intentional thing. Our government provoked Japan to attack. We had an embargo on Japan where no oil or anything could be sold to them by anyone. Well, they don't have any oil or anything on the island of Japan. So they're 100% dependent on imports. So when you shut that down, they've got to go to war with you, whether they want to or not, because they'll all starve to death. They won't even have gas for their tractors to grow food. They won't have gas for their cars and light power plants and everything else. And so FDR, behind the scenes, because they so wanted to get into World War II, as they always, they love war, all the globalists, all the pro-communist people, especially to protect Joseph Stalin, who was being attacked by Hitler, they created the conditions where Japan had no alternative. They had to do something, or they were all going to die anyway. And then when we hear in their little telegrams to each other, oh, we're getting ready to attack, we don't tell anybody. But they knew Pearl Harbor was going to be attacked, withheld the info. Why? Because they wanted lots of the boys to die. Why? So Americans would be outraged and be willing to get into the war. After World War I, Americans were done with war. We don't want anything to do with it ever again. Remember, it was first called the war to end all wars. And then when a few years later you start another world war, then it's World War I. But they knew America's patriotism. When they saw their boys being blown up and the ship sunk, that would make them rise up, which it did. I think we had 7 or 8 million young men go sign up for the military after that. But again, it was all a strategy, all a plan that our government knew about and allowed to happen anyway. But it was the exact same thing they did again in our second Pearl Harbor, 9/11, which Dick Cheney, a year before, had said, we need another Pearl Harbor so we can pass the Patriot Act and that we can permanently go to war. Do you realize we've been in an official state of war ever since September 11th? Over 25 years now, or coming up on 25 years. They've never taken us off a war footing, the war on terror, which has no end to it. But they wanted that Patriot Act passed so they could declare anyone that was against them a terrorist, a domestic terrorist, whatever, and then they have no constitutional rights. But that was just the same game plan again. They knew September 11th was going to happen, and they helped out with it in many ways that we know about, because the buildings were clearly demolitions. Planes don't take down steel frame buildings, as we know. And so, again, by understanding Pearl Harbor, it helps you understand September 11th and realize if 85 years ago our government was so evil, they would allow Japanese to attack all our innocent boys out there on a Sunday morning and just mow them down by the thousands. Well, of course, on September 11th in New York City, 85 years later, when the Christian fabric and morality is long gone, of course they would do it again then, because the humans have no value to them whatsoever. Anyway, I just wanted to cover some of those different little pieces of the puzzle without doing a whole episode on them, but I hope you learned something through that. And if you're interested, you could read that Dr. Mary's Monkeys if you want to dig in deeper. It had so many key little facts in there. I thought it was just very well written and helped better understand what was really going on back in the early 1960s. Our verse for this week is 1 Corinthians 15:37. But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. We should be so thankful for what he's done, that we do have the victory regardless of what's going on around us. And we do have purpose in our life to glorify him who has given us the victory in everything that we say and do, in the relationships we have, and then sharing the good news of the gospel of what he did for all mankind on that cross is so important. And it's really the solution to the problems that we face. But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. I appreciate you all very much. Thank you for listening. And until next week, God bless you.